Because it's so lengthy, I'll just read the translation. So the Yamadutas are speaking, talking about the Jamil's history. Once this Brahmin, a Jamil, following the order of his father, went to the forest to collect fruit, flowers, and two kinds of grass called Samit and Kusha. On the way home, he came upon a Shudra, a very lusty fourth-class man, who was shamelessly embracing and kissing a prostitute. The Shudra was smiling, singing, and enjoying as if this were proper behavior. Both the Shudra and the prostitute were drunk. Prostitute's eyes were rolling in intoxication, and her dress had become loose. Such was the condition in which Jamil saw them. Okay, let's repeat that. Once this Brahmin, a Jamil, following the order of his father,
went to the forest to collect fruit,
flowers and two kinds of grass,
called Samit and Kusha.
On the way home, he came upon a Shudra,
a very lusty fourth-class man,
who was shamelessly embracing and kissing the prostitute. The Shudra was smiling, singing, and enjoying
as if this were proper behavior.
Both the Shudra and the prostitute were drunk.
The prostitute's eyes were rolling in intoxication,
and her dress had become loose.
Such was the condition in which Jamil saw them.
Jamil came upon a fourth-class man and a prostitute, who are vividly described here. Drunkenness was sometimes manifest, even in bygone ages, although not very frequently. In this age of Kali, however, such sin is to be seen everywhere, for people all over the world have become shameless. Long ago, when he saw the scene of the drunken Shudra and the prostitute, Jamil, who was a perfect brahmachari, was affected. Nowadays, such sin is visible in so many places, and we must consider the position of a brahmachari student who sees such behavior. For such a brahmachari to remain steady is very difficult unless he is extremely strong in following the regulated principles. Nevertheless, if one takes the Krishna consciousness very seriously, he can withstand the provocation created by sin. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we prohibit illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. In Kali Yuga, a drunk, half-naked woman embracing a drunk man is a very common sight, especially in the Western countries. And restraining oneself after seeing such things is very difficult. Nevertheless, if by the grace of Krishna one adheres to the regulated principles and chants the Hare Krishna mantra, Krishna will certainly protect him. Indeed, Krishna says that his devotee is never vanquished. Kunteya pratijanihi nami bhakta pranashati. Therefore, all the disciples practicing Krishna consciousness should obediently follow the regulated principles and remain fixed in chanting the holy name of the Lord. Then there need be no fear. Otherwise, one position is very dangerous, especially in this age, in this Kali Yuga. And in the next verse, it just talks about the action. The Shudra, his arm decorated with turmeric powder, was embracing the prostitute. When Ajamil saw her, the dormant, lusty desires in his heart awakened, and in illusion he fell under their control. And Prabhupada says there, just two lines. It is said that if one's body is smeared with turmeric, it attracts the lusty desires of the opposite sex. The word Kamba Liptena indicates that the Shudra was decorated with turmeric smeared on his body. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jnana Nirashalakaya Chakshuru Lirit. tandina tasma shri
Tyaishi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Shiva Girata Shiva Shri Guru Bhaktivinoda
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama
Hare
Hare
Bhagavatam has nice literary style. We don't have such an explicit picture of exactly why Ajamil is now going to be taken away by the Jamadutas. We know that he's sinful, he's living with a prostitute, even at age 80, he still has a young child, 2-year-old child, so he's just playing about. So that means that he hasn't reformed, he hasn't changed at all. But here now, while the Yamadutas are actually responding to the Vishnu Dutas' questions, then they disclose actually in detail how it is that Ajamil, who is a Brahmana, here Srila Prabhupada said that he was also a perfect Brahmachari, but still he became degraded, very degraded. And it's later on we see, and it says that he seems that either, when Srila Prabhupada refers to him being a brahmachari, either he was a brahmachari at this point and then got married, although that doesn't seem likely from the unfolding of the pastime, but rather that he'd been a perfect brahmachari. He got married, he had a very chaste, faithful, beautiful wife. He gave her up. He gave her up after he used up her family wealth. But sometimes Brahmins were wealthy at that time, especially if they had some connection to aristocracy and the kings would maintain them. So he used all that up, gave up his wife, and then he went off and lived with the same woman. Very, very interesting. This happened in the previous Kali Yuga. So this is over 4 million years ago this was taking place. And of course it's very relevant and an important aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because here, concentration on the holy name of the Lord and the power and the potency of the holy name is being explained. Although Bhagavatam begins by bringing our attention to the importance of chanting, it ends with glorification of Sankirtan. And here, this entire lila or pastime emphasizes how important and how powerful chanting is in comparison to other types of religious activities. Because what's happened up to now in the preceding 60-odd verses is that, of course, Ajamil's story in brief has been narrated, and then from that brief story we come to he's lying on his deathbed. He's lying on his deathbed, and his little son is playing, and as he's about to leave his body, he sees the Yamadutas who are coming together. And in fear, he calls out for his son's name, he calls out Narayan. We were actually reading that in Srila Prabhupada was giving class in that Anama Samhita 1976. Because by 77, Srila Prabhupada wasn't giving classes anymore at Gaur Purnima Festival. And at that time, it seems that either it was already in the text or whoever was reading out said he called out Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. And Prabhupada said that's not correct. Prabhupada only called it Narayan once. And so he called his son's name Narayan. And there's a history behind that, which is not actually described here. But like some of the pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam, not all of them, but some of them, they're described in other Puranas. And there's other details given in those Puranas that aren't described here. The detail, and I can't remember where, but one of the Puranas that sort of clarifies how is it that Ajamil, who was so fallen, ended up calling his son Narayan. And this was that one of the sages who we generally come across in Vedic literature, he was inspired by the Lord to go to Ajamil. And Ajamil was a Brahmin, but Prabhupada often refers to him as a Vaishnava, as a devotee. So that he was already executing devotional service, and it was becoming very clear that his time was up. And so the sage came just prior to the birth of this young boy, and Ajamil greeted him. So even though he was a drunk, a thief, says that he even actually murdered for his own maintenance, so it's pretty sinful. But still, he had enough culture to greet a sadhu, and he greeted him and he offered him water, and then they had a little exchange, and he said, my wife's just about to give birth to a child, which is very interesting, because Ajamil was 80, so his wife wasn't too much younger, even if she was 10 years younger, so she was quite old. And somehow that's not, isn't so uncommon. Well, I'm thinking of Advaitacharya, because his sons took birth when he was 90, in his 90s. So I mean, Sita Devi was somewhat in a similar age, but then he's Mahavishnu and she's Lakshmi, so that's understandable. Mm-hmm. But here, this was just a prostitute. But still, she was elderly. And she said, my wife's just about to give birth, please give him a name. Just like the devotees now ask, oh, we're going to have a name, we're going to have a baby, and we'd like to have a Krishna conscious name. So she said, you should call him Narayan. Doesn't say what his other children were called, but it says, call him Narayan. And so Ajamil accepted it, and he started calling him Narayan. Of course, when the child was born, then he was chanting Namabhas. He was Namabhas in the sense that he wasn't committing any offense. He wasn't chanting, he wasn't saying the name of his child with any ulterior purpose, any of the 10 offenses that we hear about. But Ashraka, he didn't have much faith. In other words, he wasn't chanting with the idea that he had great faith either in the Supreme Lord. He'd forgotten all about that. But still, he was saying Narayan's name. And so this was actually the Lord's reciprocation that this person had done. As Prabhupada quotes, Kuntiya Patijani Hinami Bhakta Pramashas. That Krishna never forgets devotional service that was rendered. And of course, this is a special story, not necessarily going to happen to everyone. But usually the stories in Bhagavatam, especially in Bhagavatam, are exceptional examples. So it isn't that we should try to live like a Ajamil and figure that when we're 80 years old, Krishna is going to send somebody to have our last child named Narayan. But these things can happen, and this is the potency of the name. So he was saying Narayan and Narayan, and by that he was gradually becoming purified from the results of his past sinful activities. And this is the absolute truth. This is really the Parodharmo. Parodharmo yati bhakti ratvoksaje. So Bhagavatam starts about Parodharmo. But here come the Yamadutas, and they're taking away from the sinful activity. They don't take note of the fact that he has chanted Narayan. And somehow they're also not clear about the fact that the chanting of Lord Narayan's name is a religious principle or a transcendental principle that's above those types of dharmic principles to which they're used to. Because that's what the Vishnu, and of course then the Vishnu do disappear. And the appearance of the Vishnu Duttas is also recounted, is that Lord Narayan is watching what's going on. And when he sees that the Yamadutas appear, then he stops his holding court and talking to Lakshmi Devi, and he immediately calls the Vishnu Duttas. And of course, what takes a second or two here is, well, there's no time. There's only present time in the spiritual world. So he calls the Vishnu Duttas and he says, you go to this Ajamil now and you stop the Yamadutas. So they immediately come down and they stop them. And the Yamadutas have never seen these type of personalities before. First time they've seen the Vishnu Duttas. And Ajamil, he now becomes like this witness to this conversation. And the Vishnu Duttas say, what are you doing? And he said, we're taking away because he's sinful. He goes, really? Well, if you're taking him away because he's sinful, we want to know on what grounds you're taking him away, so you explain to us what is dharma. And then they start responding. And the Yamadutas are still talking. They talk about what dharma. The dharma is that which is described in the Vedic literature. Vedic literature is spoken by Narayan. And everything that we're going to tell you, we've heard from Yamaraj. So they're speaking in a very authentic way. They quote Shastra, they refer to the Supreme Lord, and they refer to Guru, their spiritual masters. And he's not an ordinary person, he's also one of the Mahajans. And the Vishnu Duttas are very patient. They're listening, and they're listening. They don't cut them off. They let him talk. And then they're still talking. And that talking is still going on for quite a while. Until the Vishnu Duttas in the next chapter start off. Oh, actually, yes, we went over this last time, and they say, aho. And then it's, alas. And then they say, these guys don't know what they're talking about. Although they may be talking about religious principles, but they don't understand what the purpose of religious principles are. Because Vedic culture, ultimately, through what Srila Prabhupada calls the yoga ladder, is meant to gradually elevate people to the understanding that the parodharma, what is that? Bhakti rabhuksaje. It means unmotivated devotional service to Krishna. And part of that unmotivated devotional service, or the exercise of that in sadhana bhakti, is chanting. And that chanting supersedes all of these other types of Vedic yama, niyama, rules and regulations, where a living entity is punished for some certain type of sinful activity, or he has to atone for them. And that is how actually this chapter began. Shukadeva Goswami was talking about the process of atonement, and now here is something, is a whole different world unfolds, that simply you say the name of Lord Narayan, Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he's free from his sinful activity. Why are you punishing him when he's actually now become already sinless? And this is something new to the Yamadutas. And so they'll go back to Yamaraj and they say, we came across this, and it seems like they were very much aware that the Vishnu Duttas were very powerful. They were more powerful for them. There was no fight. They didn't put up a fight when the Vishnu Duttas says, no, you can't take him. They just turned around and left because they saw that it was useless trying to fight with the Vishnu Duttas. And the Yamadutas then inquired from Yamaraj, is this something that we don't know? You're sending us out on missions to bring sinful people, but we came and went and got this sinful person, and we were stopped by these very four extraordinary personalities, and we couldn't surpass their power. So why are we not properly informed about things? And then Yamaraj explains about the real truth, or the essential secrets and the knowledge which is known to the Mahajans. So here, this is the history. And as Srila Prabhupada points out, the history of Ajamil going out into the forest. So at least there it wasn't happening in the city. And here it says a fourth class person, so that means a Shudra. It was much less common. Although often you read these type of stories about Brahmins who become corrupt, Ajamil becomes one, or Vaishyas or kings. But here this was in the case of a Shudra. And they were going on in the way that a lot of men and women go on nowadays, but they do it in public places, in the cities, on the streets. In fact, it's very natural. But here, it was in the forest. He went to get the different ingredients necessary for performing sacrifice. Kusha grass, fruit, flowers, these things were there. Samit grass also for the performance of sacrifice, which Brahmins are meant to do. And he came upon this. And then, interesting, that's why I read the other verse. It says, when Ajamil saw her, when he saw the woman, I guess he wasn't that bad off in Kali Yuga at that time. He didn't say when he saw him. So it wasn't that he became attracted to the other Shudra, but he was attracted to the prostitute. Still things haven't gone as far as they've gone nowadays. When Ajamil saw her, the dormant lusty desire in his heart awakened, and in illusion he fell under their control. So it's very interesting that although he was a Brahmin, he, in lectures, Prabhupada refers to him as being a devotee. So what type of devotee he was, that isn't necessarily very clear. But obviously, there was still actually dormant desire within his heart, even though he was executing all of these religious activities. And just by seeing this, it was like a spark on a fire. And in illusion, he fell under their control. So in other words, he lost it. It was very interesting how just a small thing or one thing or a single incident can then make one actually give up all of their past pious activities. Because then he said, as far as possible, he patiently tried to remember the instructions of Shastra, not to even see a woman. With the help of this knowledge and his intellect, he tried to control his lusty desires, but because of the force of Cupid within his heart, he failed to control his mind. In the same way that the sun and the moon are eclipsed by a low planet, namely Rahu, the Brahmin lost all his good sense. Taking advantage of this situation, he always thought of the prostitute, and within a short time, he took her as a servant in his house and abandoned all regulative principles of the Brahmin. In the purport that we were reading, the original purport, Srila Prabhupada was pointing out that if Ajamil succumbs, if a qualified Brahmin succumbs to such a sight, which was very rare in those times, for instance, this type of thing, even when I was young, say 50 years back, it didn't happen. It wasn't the type of thing that would be going on in public in the same way that goes on now. People dress differently. Even when I went to high school, university, things had changed. But even in high school, boys and girls didn't sit together, sat in one and sat in the other. Sometimes when I go to university preaching or high school, I notice that there's no his and hers anymore. It's just one bath, one toilet, and they use the same bathroom. So things have changed a lot, even in the last 50 years. Amazingly so. The only drug that we knew about were the stuff that they sold in drugstores, aspirin and things like that. Those at least in the early teens. Then later on in the university, then in the 60s, then really things started to explode. And amazingly how much things have really changed in the last 50 years, phenomenally. So this was previous Kali Yuga. Things were at least still somewhat better. Srila Prabhupada says this wasn't commonly seen yet at that time. And but nowadays it's going on all the time. So how are we supposed to stay Krishna conscious? How is someone supposed to protect themselves? What to speak of if we're talking, Srila Prabhupada talks about a brahmachari. All right, the brahmacharis are coming home to a temple, and even when they go out, they're doing harinam, or they're distributing books, or devotees who are engaging in full-time service. What about those who have to work with people like this? And nowadays, we know that a large portion of the devotee population are working, they have some type of employment. They're lucky if they're self-employed, they're even luckier if they're working with devotees, although they may find out that devotees don't have the same work ethic as non-devotees do. In other words, they generally have a lower work ethic. I get that complaint a lot from our devotees, our patrons, our sponsors who have different businesses, and they say, actually, you should try to employ devotees, and they do. But they often come back with this excuse that devotees think that if they had a bad day, or if their minds are disturbed, or if they still got some rounds left, then they can take that off work, and that influences their work. They don't have the same type of experience that, for instance, generally in the world, that you know, when you go to work, you leave your private life at home, and well, of course, they don't have any spiritual life anyway, but you've got to put in a quality time. But what about those devotees? And for them to actually progress and advance in Krishna consciousness, so Srila Prabhupada here points out that if one is very strong in the regulative principles, in following four regulative principles and chanting Hare Krishna. And as we have, for instance, in the temples, especially for those who are having to work outside in the world, if they have a very strong morning program at home. If they live close to the temple, then it's preferably at the temple. But without that type of insulation or with that type of inoculation, in the same way as, you know, nowadays, if there's every fall, very often you see recommendations in health services that especially elder people, people are in their 50s and 60s, they should get inoculation for flu because they're much more subject to actually having serious problems or even death just from a flu. So you get an inoculation, you are inoculated with a vaccine, and more or less that protects you from getting flu, from getting a disease, and there are so many other diseases like that. Same way, in order to actually be protected from the influence, the association of materialistic people, unless one has a regular as well as a daily, it can be nitya, it's something that's ongoing, and it's also daily inoculation, then ultimately one will be worn down. And we're not here in this material world because we've necessarily all been sent here from Goloka. So there are lusty desires dormant within the heart. And given the right circumstances, or wrong circumstances, because they're bad circumstances, given the proper circumstances, lusty desires can just come up in a flame just at a moment's notice. And one loses control. So sometimes it just happens like that. Of course, if someone's strong, then there's the intermediate position. One is that someone's not affected at all, which can be quite rare. Another is that, you know, we go out on Harinam, and sometimes we're not just always looking forward and chanting, but sometimes, you know, the head tends to turn for one reason or another, whether it's something in the shop or whether it's someone's walked by. But still, all right, back and we continue on. So, as Krishna always says, Chanchala Himana Krishna Pranati Balavadriham. Arjuna is saying that, and Krishna is saying, yes, mind is very difficult to control. Abhyasena Yogena Vairagena Griyate. But by constant practice and detachment, in others, all right, bring it back, bring the mind back. And that's generally what happens. But if one is not very careful, then the material energy can lead one into a trap. And generally, the trap seems to be almost the same trap. And that is that devotees become lax in spiritual practices, particularly in dependence on the holy name, and in quality chanting of Hare Krishna. And at that time, material energy seems to pull back. Hey, I'm doing all right. There's no problem. It's like a trap, or like a hunter. You know, a hunter just sets a trap, and then just allows some animal to come, and she comes forward, and say sometimes they set out, in Bhagavatam you read the examples of hunters who used to catch birds. And so they throw all kinds of edibles for birds out, and the birds come, and they eat, and you don't throw the net right away, you wait. You wait until they're eating, until they're relaxed, because the birds can move really fast, and until a whole flock of them comes, and then there's a net above, and when they're off guard and they're thinking, boy, we're doing well, and their stomachs sort of fold, and all of a sudden, bang, and they're caught. So my day also seems to work like that. When devotees become lax in devotional practice, she may let up on her influence. And then, of course, Krishna is there, just like Lord Narayan sends the Vishnu Dutas. And Krishna will also actually inspire devotees. And devotees will say, Prabhu, Mataji, shouldn't you be coming to the morning program? I see that you haven't been walking around with your bead bag lately very much. Or that you've graduated to a clicker or something. So when you do that when you're chanting or you're driving your car, so Krishna also gives the warning, and the warnings come. But unless the warnings are heeded, then at a certain point my lady just drops the net, and then it just takes a little thing, and then all of a sudden find out how weak I've actually really become. So the history is not so detailed. It leaves something for us to sort of come to certain conclusions that Ajamil had also become lax in some way, because all of a sudden he had these lusty desires, he wasn't able to control them, although he remembered all the instructions that he heard, but it didn't work anymore. In other words, he was, as in English you say, he was just too far gone. So we need to be very, very careful. And Srila Prabhupada gave us that example. When Prabhupada came to London in 77, then I can't remember when he came to 77. He went to see Radhananda Nishwara. They were still in Bury Place, and I was just before he moved to Silver Street. Then Prabhupada prayed to Radhananda Nishwara to engage him in Radharasa Bihari service. But at other times, and I'm remembering it because it was Tamar Krishna Maharaj told me, and then Tamar Krishna Maharaj asked him, Srila Prabhupada, what were you praying for? And same thing when Srila Prabhupada came before, some other deities elsewhere, Tamar Krishna Maharaj asked him, what were you praying for? And Srila Prabhupada says, I was praying to Krishna that I don't fall down. So that's also part of a Vaishnava's psychology, is that he always thinks himself capable of falling down, even though Srila Prabhupada would be way beyond any such circumstance. And always thinks himself very, very humble, because if one thinks oneself humble, that I guess I can't fall down, then my only shelter are these devotional activities. And if I do these devotional activities very strictly, then in innumerable places and times and letters and personal conversation, Prabhupada said, the Maya will not be able to touch you. She may be able to tempt us because she's there. She won't be able to touch. So at least that's to be learned from this purport, from Prabhupada's purport. And then we should stop and take prasadam. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Bhagavatam ki jai. Jai Nitai Gopinam.